About 3 billion people watched Rhoda Roberts' work in 2000, the night the Sydney Olympics opened. Before the torch and the parade of athletes, she put 1,000 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander dancers out into the field in an unforgettably beautiful act of Indigenous possession. She was a mighty Australian. Since the news broke of her death on Saturday, Rhoda and her work have been celebrated across the country. She was a mainstay of our culture, of our festivals and events, of radio and television. She was also the First Nations woman who came up with the idea years ago of welcomes to country. When they came under attack from Senator Jacinta Namba-Jimpa-Price and others during the election campaign early last year, we invited Rhoda Roberts onto the show to speak about an ancient practice that she'd revived for modern times. She was warm, generous and staunch. Here, with the permission of her family, is Rhoda Roberts in February 2025.
Well, thank you for having me.
Hey, now, how was the ceremony, the modern ceremony, born?
Well, of course, we always had a certain type of border control in the old ways. So when you sang the song line at the song cycle period, when you were entering other nations or clans, you would, of course, call out, announce yourself. They would respond, invite you in, and then you would go through either a smoking or a sweat transference ceremony. You might be dabbed with eucalyptus. And it was basically just the logistics of making sure there wasn't a strange scent on country where animals would flee. It was also, like all border control, actually knowing who was on your lands and where they were travelling to. So my understanding is, of course, this continued at our events and cultural elements, you know, from the arrival with occupation. But it was soon outlawed, and so we just did it quietly when we were at specific events. But in 1973... the world was changing, Vietnam, moratoriums, and of course there was this huge counterculture. And they arrived on the Widjibal Wyabal lands of the Bundjalung Nation into Nimbin, one of our local towns, and started the Aquarius Festival. They were aware that they needed to do these sorts of things, and so my uncle, Lyle Roberts Jr., went out, met with them, and brought in the uncles, and they did a naming ceremony in language. And then the Kukyalanji and the Mornington Island dancers also joined in for that national call. And so I believe that was really possibly the first time there was a welcome and the ritual of language in a modern day festival. A few years later, in WA, Ernie Dingo and Richard Wally were also doing some of these at their events. And so by the 80s, I went, why don't we bring it back? Because it's really like a religious practice for us. And hey, Australia really appreciates religious freedom. And so we wanted that ritual to continue just for us to honour the ancestors and the lands we were on. And so I coined it Welcome to Country. And so it began, and it really began across the creative sector with gallery openings or theatre shows and so forth. Our allies went, this is a great idea. It brings us all together. And so we started those welcomes.
How were they received?
They were received with great reverence, and people realised that we had this structured society where we used to do good manners, really. And so this protocol was able to reclaim the language, some of the local stories and so forth, and it really empowered. But for me, it was building a cultural economy. Our culture is our advantage. So why not do these? And like anything, if you get an expert or a consultant in, you highly regard them and reciprocate their time and knowledge with a small payment. $452,000. Whoa.
Well, over 2 years, only over. Oh.
Only over 2 years.
I mean, it's more money, more money being wasted like that.
They get everything. Those Aborigines get everything. The reality is what you're doing is paying someone and respecting them for their incredible knowledge, but we are developing that cultural economy that gives us independence. And we hear all the time about the welfare situation. Well, hey, guys, this is a step in the right direction. Today, I tend to call it calling country because we called on the song line. And so about the last decade, I've been doing calling countries, but not just for us. In some of the bigger events we do, we call country. We enable our brothers and sisters from the Torres Straits to call country. And it's very performative. It's done in the old ways, just through language. And then we invite those who live in Australia that also come from Indigenous families across the globe, and we enable them to also call country in their languages and songs.
What's the text that you use for calling for country? What are the words?
Well, it's all done in language because we think the intent of it, you as an audience member, you actually see that you're in the emotive and you know, you witness it, which is pretty special. But it's all done in everyone's language. So if I was to do it, it'd be Jumbana, Balagami, Garamaba, Garama, Ni, and so forth, right?
Meaning?
I would be saying, while I'm on your country, I pay my respects to the land and the ancestors, and I hope I take something away from this country with respect.
It's not the text we hear, for instance, in Sydney or in Melbourne, where there is a more formal and in English wording about respect to elders and welcome to country, and it's not in that form. Is there a settled form?
I've written so many different types of acknowledgements in English and welcomes. And, of course, a custodian of those lands does the welcome. Anyone else who's not from that country does an acknowledgement. And I do think it's important that we're acknowledging these different lands. But we didn't stand there with the microphone and go, hi, everyone, welcome, and we respect the past, present and future. But in the songs that you hear, that's the intent of the language, and that's what you're hearing. And, of course, there are some people who just do the rote, and it's very tokenistic. Whereas when you hear someone say, for example, everyone knows Sydney CBD is Gadigal lands, but you can make it more personal. They're six-season country people. They are the grass tree people. That's how they were known, because of their relationship and stewardship of grass trees. So adding just a bit of local seasons or, you know, about that particular language group, I think is really important. But it seems to be that government, and I really, really don't know why, particularly with the opposition, I look at them and this absolute anger about divisiveness that this is creating. And I'm like, are you really serious? Like, what is it that you're so fearful of that someone has just said, we're now standing on the lands of these people, and this was what it was called before occupation? That is the truth. And, you know, I can wake up any day in any city across this country and I'll hear that mosque prayer in the early morning hours. Or I'll hear someone say, oh my gosh, we've got our son's bar mitzvah on the weekend. Or I'll hear someone saying, oh, I went to church the other day and did communion, being a good Catholic. I have no problem. That doesn't fear me. I have no problem. I think it's wonderful that we allow a freedom of religious expression. But hang on, this shadow ministry seems to be pushing assimilation once again, and they see this as a threat, and we're spending good taxpayers' money? Seriously?
Huge sums of money. Huge sums of money. Rhoda, Do you think, though, that the opposition might also be calling on something else, which is that perhaps these ceremonies are happening too often? I mean, I'm old enough to remember God Save the Queen being played before every concert, before every theatre performance, even at the pictures, before any movie was ever shown at the pictures. You had the Queen on a horse playing with the national anthem, and it was just numbing. It was just numbing. And I know there are people who think these ceremonies, the welcomes, the acknowledgements, are happening too often, even when a plane lands now.
I can't tell you how much Christianity has dominated Aboriginal lives. Well, we've heard it every day. You know, we will civilize you, we'll give you the Bible, and we'll teach you to be civilized. And you will stop your barbaric rituals. Well, you know what? We're not doing it for you. So if you don't like sitting and hearing a welcome to country, that's okay. Leave. We don't care. You can leave. We are doing it because we are the people of this country, and we've always done this, and we are now reactivating it because when occupation occurred and those Christians came here, they outlawed it. So we have an opportunity in the 21st century to continue a ritual practice that our forebears handed down to us. This is our legacy. And so I'll do it continuously, because I will never enter someone else's country without having good manners and acknowledging the lands I'm on and paying my respects, because that's what we do. So really, it's for us. It's for us to heal. It's for us to reconnect. When there were such barriers over the last couple of hundred years with occupation that denied us our religious right.
It's also an opportunity to teach, isn't it?
Oh, you know, the most amazing thing, if you look at anyone under 40, maybe 35, I'm getting old.
No, I'm not. I'm not 35.
Most people, young people, and it fills you with a joy, and it fills you with some incredible shared spirit, shared history, because you can talk to anyone that's young and they will tell you the lands they're living on, where they grew up and what the name of that language group was and where they work. And I go, wow, that's amazing. They just know it.
They're learning the map. They're learning the map.
Yeah. And it's part of the norm, and it doesn't threaten them. It doesn't worry them. I come from a family, a Bundjalung family, who tried, my father instilled in us, always remember the kinship structure. You can't have a healthy community without generosity, kindness, and patience. And so everything in his framework was based on these systems that clearly worked and had worked and worked for thousands of years. And so I'm okay. I want to be generous. I want to remind people that we can work together and we need to work together because this is the 21st century. But to just have that little bit of respect of protocol that allow us to do what we want to do inside our hearts and be kind and open and be flexible. It's a bit like, how would you feel if I walked into your lounge room and I didn't knock on the front door? You'd be appalled. Same thing, just good manners.
On Late Night Live, I'm talking to Rhoda Roberts, arts executive, producer, performer, Bundjalung woman, about welcomes to country. Rhoda, I have read here and there that there are Indigenous who, particularly after the result of the Voice referendum, aren't particularly keen on welcoming us to country. They wonder, in fact, whether we deserve it.
Look, there was an awful lot of hurt last year across our communities. And again, that sort of agenda of we're being divisive. when all we were asking for was, hey, it's the truth. You know we were here first. Let's just put it in the Constitution so we're acknowledged. But this, again, this assimilist attitude that created such complexity around that referendum. And when you consider the majority of Aboriginal communities voted yes, there was only one in the territory that didn't. And all they were hearing was the propaganda again of being us, you know, wanting one thing while all other Australians couldn't have it. But I say, I think it comes from a hurt and a place where it makes you feel pretty, like we talk about being resilient. But we're human beings, and every day when you have to justify why culture is so important and why the truth-telling needs to be heard, and then you witness an entire nation say, we don't want to see you, we don't want to hear you, and you just become like us. So I appreciate there are senior custodians and law men and women and aunties and uncles out there who say, I'm not doing a welcome because they don't make us feel welcome, so why should we welcome them?
Yeah.
But I think you have to be bigger than that. If I think of our grandparents and our great-grandparents and the struggle they fought just to have the visibility and a voice, always calling for equity. We need to continue those legacies. So I won't stop, and I will continue the legacy of my birthright. My great-grandfather, the last fully initiated man of the Bundjalung Nation, he told us, he wrote a three-point plan so we could live by. And it was always about continuing our language, our culture, and learning to work with the newcomers so our lives would be rich with both histories.
Do you tell these stories when you're doing a welcome to country?
Not all of them. I don't often do them, to be quite honest. I do them if I'm doing a production or something like that, particularly if I'm on someone else's land. I really want to pay those respects. But the welcomes I leave, especially if it's at home on Widjibal Wyabal lands, I'll leave it to other custodians, because I think it's also important that our communities have a platform, and often they don't get heard. I get heard all the time. So I think it's really important for sectors of the community to do it. It just increases your confidence and empowers you.
Now, Rhoda, as one of the leading theatre directors in this country, you would have to acknowledge, would you not, that some people perform better than others when welcoming to country?
Of course, yes. You know, in the lead up to the Olympic Games, we created the Gamarada team. We provided uniforms, suits, and drivers, and we took them to all the events, you know, to make sure that they were opened correctly. But we did take the 22 clan groups of the Sydney Basin, selected a male and female from their community. That was their choice, not ours, and which was great. And, you know, following on from the traditions of men's business and women's business. And some of them were just community people. I mean, they weren't public speakers. So we actually put them through media training to build that confidence. And it was fantastic. So I think the more people do them, of course, the better they get at it and more comfortable with audiences. I just think the fact that an elder's getting up and giving us some history and knowledge is important, and if they use that platform of a welcome for it, then again, kindness and patience creates a really healthy society.
What's the most moving, most beautiful welcome to country you've ever heard?
Gosh. I think it was, we recently did a very small one at the Byron Bay Writers Festival, and one of the big things is, you know, the Arakwal of the Bundjalung Nation are the host country for the Byron Bay Writers Festival. And so I talked with them and said, you know, but in the old ways, it wasn't just one person doing this. It was, you know, so can we do it in language? And let's invite the neighbouring estates and homelands. And so you had these incredible calls from across our nation. But of course, all the dialects are different. So it just emphasised that language is so different in one nation. But it was also, we selected our senior cultural holders. Oh my gosh, it was just so amazing. They didn't talk English or anything. They just sang their song, the next one up, the next one. And then we had some of the artists that were in the festival from around the country who also then responded. It was just nice. But I think the best one was one for Vivid, not last year, the year before, the opening of Vivid in Sydney. That was pretty amazing. We had Maori, African, Papua New Guinea, the Pacific. It was amazing.
That's the late Rhoda Roberts speaking to me in February last year.